So we're starting here by the Mishnah on Yud Chet Amud Aleph. It says, Masrulo Zkenim Mizikne Beitin. They gave over Zkenim from the Zikne Beitin. He got a number of them to take care of him. Bekorim Lefanav B'Seder Ayom. And they read to him from the Seder Ayom, Seder Ayom in Parashat Achrei Mod. So he should familiarize himself what he needs to do. From Rimbo Ishi Adoni, our master, Kohen Gadol, Kra'ata Beficha. You should read it yourself. Shema shachachta. Maybe you forgot something in here so that you'd be, again, familiarize yourself. Well, Shema volamato. Or maybe you didn't learn it yet. Erev Yom HaKippurim Shacharit. I mean, Erev Yom Kippur in the morning, Mambino to Bishar Mizrach. They put him on the eastern gate. Marin Lefanab Parim Veilim Ukvasim. They bring the animals before him so that he should be familiar with what's a par, what's an ayo, and what's a kevis, because these are going to be part of the avoda on Yom HaKippurim, so he needs to know the animals that he's going to bump into. That he would know what would be entailed in the avoda on the subsequent day. For the entire 7 days, they didn't withhold food or drink from him. Every Yom Kippur, as the day of Yom Kippur approached, they started to withhold food from him. They told him he can't eat too much. Because you eat too much, you get tired. And they didn't want him to fall asleep. He needed to stay up the whole night of Yom HaKippurim. Bishlama Shema Shachach B'chayit. Alright, if you say that maybe he forgot something, I understand that. Oh, Shema Lo Lamad? Wait, he didn't learn this? Who makes a Kohen Gadol that doesn't know what's in Parashat Achrei Mot? V'atanya, V'akohen HaGadol Me'echav. The Kohen Gadol, why does it say Kohen Gadol Me'echav from his brothers? Shehe Gadol Me'echav. He has to be greater than his brothers, b'koach and strength, knowing beauty, b'chokhmah and wisdom, b'osher and wealth. Cherim omrim, minayim she'in lo. What happens if he doesn't have? I'm assuming he's talking about osher. Echav ha'kohanim megadlin oto. His brothers of kohanim enrich him so that he will have all of these items. Tamlomar v'agohen ha'gadol me'echav. That the Kohen Gadol, he was gadol because of his brothers. Gadol mishel achav, that you make him greater because of his brethren. Am Rav Yosef lokasho, that's not a problem. Kan b'migdash rishon, kan b'migdash sheni. So this is in the first Beit HaMikdash, this is in the second Beit HaMikdash. In the first Beit HaMikdash, the Kohanim were qualified. Probably early on in Migdash Sheni, they were also qualified, but we know at later half of Beit Sheni that a lot of corruption had come up. The kings and the government officials were involved in appointing the Kohen Gadol, and therefore maybe someone who wasn't qualified ended up being the Kohen Gadol, and the Gemara brings a sample story to show you that that was the case. Damar Rabbi Asi, Tarkava di Dinare, Ailele Marta bat Baikus, a Tarkava, which is a tray plus a kav, three kav, half a sa'ah worth of silver coins. Marta bat Baitus gave to Yanai Malka, Yanai the king, Al du Ukme li Yeshua ben Gamla bekane Ravave, that he would appoint Yeshua ben Gamla to be the Kohen Gadol. Rashi claims that she was a very rich widow, and that she was marrying Yeshua ben Gamla, Kidsha. I don't know if they were engaged or married, and she wanted him to be the Kohen Gadol. So she used her wealth, her husband's wealth, to ensure that her new husband would be the Kohen Gadol. So here the Gemara gives you an example of someone who's not necessarily ra'ui, appropriate for the position, but because of the bribe that was paid, he ends up being the Kohen Gadol. Gemara and Izakin in Gitin that discusses the Korban HaBayit, and one of the stories there about Korban HaBayit is about Marta bat Baitus. My brother-in-law pointed out that maybe that story is really Mida Keneged Mida over here. In that story, Marta bat Baitus wants some food, so she's wealthy. She sends out her shliach to the shuk to pick up an item of food. He goes there, and there was none left. So he comes back to her, says, look, there's nothing left. She goes, all right, so we'll get this item. She sends her back again. That item's gone. Comes back to her and says, that's gone also. She sends it back for a third item. He goes out. By the time he gets there, it's all gone as well. Comes back, third, fourth time. And he's unsuccessful at getting food for her because every time he comes back and forth, whatever's there in the shuk is gone. And the Gemara there says that she was such a mifuneket, such a wealthy woman that couldn't handle anything that was out of the ordinary, that she steps into, I think, some dung and dies from that. What's interesting about the story is, that was a story in which money couldn't buy anything. She had all the money in the world, and she could purchase it, but her money couldn't get her anything. Maybe that's the Mida Keneged Mida over here, where her money, she purchased the Kuna Gdola, Mida Keneged Mida, her money over there doesn't get her anything, because even though she has the money, there's no food to be had, and every time her shliach goes out, he can't get her what she wants. That might have been a midah, can I give midah for the story here? Right. Erev Yom Kippurim Shacharit, Tana Af HaSeirim. Wait a minute. We have a braita that says that there was a fourth animal that's mentioned there, which is the Seirim. We have the Seir Lazazel and the Seir Shlashem. How come those aren't mentioned amongst the animals that are there? You have the Par, the Ayol, the Kvasim. You also have Seirim and Yom Kippurim. All four of them are relevant to Yom Kippurim. Tana Didan Maitaima, Lo Tana Seirim. Why did our Mishnah exclude or leave out Seirim? Kevin Da Chet Ka'atu Chal Shadate. Since the Seirim come for Chataim, they are the Seir Lazazel and the Seir Lashem, want to be Mechaper in the Mikdash, want to be Mechaper outside of the Mikdash. Chal Shadate. It would make him feel uneasy. We don't want to bring in front of him something that would be disconcerting. Where it says, Yochi Parnami. What about the Par? The Par Shel Aron, it functions like the, either the Seir Lashem, or maybe even like the Seir Lazazel, it's Machloket in the Gemara and Shavuot. Achetu Da'ate. That also comes from Achet. Where it says, Par came into Allah Ve'alechav HaKohanim Hu Da'ati. So since the Par comes to be Mechaper for him and his fellow Kohanim, Ve'chav HaKohanim, Iika Inishtit Be Milta. Amongst his brothers, amongst the Kohanim, he would know if someone needs to do tshuva. They did something wrong, he'd be aware of it. Midu Yodale, he would know. Umahadale B'tshuva. And either he would ensure that he does tshuva, or he would know if he did tshuva. B'kul Yisrael, lo yada. When it comes to the rest of Klal Yisrael, he wouldn't be aware, or wouldn't know this information. So that would make him uneasy about bringing the par, about bringing the sa'ir, because he's going to bring something that's mechaper on a note, and he's not sure if the individuals have done tshuva. At least with the Zechav HaGohanim, he's much more familiar with them. And that familiarity makes him comfortable that they're going to do tshuva, and when he brings the par, it'll be for the right reasons. And then it will be Mechaper. Amravina, Henu Damre Inche. This is a colloquialism that is used therefore by people. Ibarachtech Dailo. If your nephew is a tax collector, Abechazi Beshuka Kamei Lo Tachlif. If he's out in the Shuk, or if you have to appear in the Shuk, Lo Tachlif, don't pass in front of him. So the tax collector always finds reason to shake you down to get money from you. And he knows you well. He's your nephew. Since he knows you well, he'll always have the proper excuse to take money from you because he knows all of your inside scoop and all of your stories. And so he can stop you and force you to pay because he knows what's going on in your life. The idea being that people who are close or relatives have a good sense of what's going on in the family around them. And that's what it was describing over here by the Kohen Gadol, who knows what's going on in his extended family of Kohanim, while he doesn't necessarily know that about all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, L'koshivat Yamim, lo yominim imen ochel. For all those 7 days, they did not withhold any food for him. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda ben Negusa, Omer, Machilin oto siltot ubeitzim, kdei lemas miso. They fed him flour and eggs. Kdei lemas miso, Rashi says, is in order to be mishel shelhim. To clear out his system. If you do that, you're more likely to cause him or generate a problem of balkeri. So Tanyo Sumchus Amar Mishum Rabbi Meir. So the brayta that Sumchus has the name of Meir. In machilim oto lo avi, famila lo abavi. These are acronyms. It says you don't feed him abi or abavi. Veishomim afalo yayin lavan. And some say that you can't even give him white wine. Lo abi, what is that? Lo etrog, velo beitzim, velo yain yashan. Can't feed him etrog, beitzim, eggs, and lo yain yashan, and aged wine. So all of these are supposedly going to cause, or do cause, sightings of keri. And so we want to prevent that from happening, so we don't give him these food items. Because they do cause it. V'ami lo, lo abavi, lo etrog, lo beitzim, lo basar shamein, lo yain yashan. So this alternative reading adds in basar shamein, meat that's fatty, on top of the three items that we mentioned before. Eshamim af lo yain lavan. Some say also not white wine. Mivnei shayin lavan meviyat adam lidei tumah. Because white wine brings a person to carry. Now, what's interesting here, the Gemara doesn't tell you why, but a number of these items, and we're going to see more items before, are white and their consistency. And I don't know if Gemara has a correlation between the color of the item and saying that that's a cause for the carry. Because in their day, they believe very strongly in this idea of seeing something has an effect, a physical effect on the body. Including the Gemara mentions about sighting of a nida. One who looks at a nida also talks about if a woman sees a person before she has bia, that has impact on the child, what the child will look like, what the child will be like. That's why Rabbi Yochanan sat outside of the Beit Tevilah. So the women coming out would see him, and then they would have children like him. So they had this view that the things that you see or that you interact with have physical impact on your body. So here you have a number of items that are whitish in nature. The suggestion of maybe what that's what the cause here, because all the items they're mentioning have some sort of white to them. Zav, tolim lo b'machal, v'chol meinei machal. When it comes to a zav and a balkeri are really two different problems. Balkeri is a seminal emission, whereas a zav is some sort of emission, but not obviously a seminal emission. The Gemara describes how you know this. Rashi quotes it all. It has to do with the viscosity and the whiteness of the liquid. Tell whether it's keri or a zav. Now, a zav, when he has his first sighting, is the same din as a balkeri. They have the same din. The only thing is, if a zav has multiple re'iyot, then he goes on to become more and more tamei. Balkeri is only tamei tumat erev, like the first sighting of a zav. So the Gemara says, if a person ate, no matter what the food substance was, then we are tole it in the machal. That means because the Torah says that it's zav mibsaro, the zav has to emit from his flesh. That means it has to come from the disease and not from another cause, from an alternative cause. So if one eats and the excess food is what causes the emission of zav, then it's not called a zav. Because the zav has to come out naturally, not because of other causes. Balkeri is even if he's an onus, meaning that we don't worry about how or what caused the keri. If there's an emission of keri, by definition, the person is tamei. So that would be the difference between these two items, between zav and keri. So here, it's zav, tolim lo b'machal v'chol meinei achal. If he ate a lot, or he ate whole types of foods, then we assume that that's what caused the zav, and we won't count this towards his sightings of zov. Elazar ben Pinchas omer mishum Rav Yehuda ben Beteira, ein malachin ato lo chagvi v'lo gavam, v'chol lo kol devarim evim lidei tuma. So you don't feed him any of these items. You don't feed him chagvi, lo gavam, v'lo kol devarim evim lidei tuma. Anything that would cause him to have a sighting of keri. Lo chagvi, what's chagvi? Lo chalav, v'lo gvina, v'lo beitza. Velo yayin. So there, David, your question. Here you see milk, cheese, egg, and wine. So these are items, again, you have a number of white items in here that might be some of the connection or correlation. Velo gavam. Gavam is megrisim shel pul. That's grits, bean grits. Ubasar shemein, fatty meat. Umorias, and brine, fish brine. Velo kol dvarim avim lidei tuma. Out of the things that bring you veitua, the tuye mai, tuye ha, the tan rabanan, to include these items, chamisha dvarim evim et adam lidei tuma, there are five substances, food items, that bring a person to become a balkeri, veluhein, hashum, garlic, hashachlayim, which is either cress or pepperwort, veachalag logot, which is purslane, vabitzim, eggs, vagargar, which is either a berry or garden rocket. So these items cause a person to have keri, so if you consume a lot of this or have a good amount of these items, then that's problematic in terms of causing keri. So here you have a description of the food substances that they're trying to withhold from the Kohen Gadol. So he doesn't become a keri on the night of Yom Kippur, which would then disqualify him from the avoda the next day. So they do this in two ways. Number one is they reduce the amount that he eats in total. That we saw before, the Gemara says, if you eat a lot, that's also something that brings or causes shechvat zera. In addition, there are certain food substances that cause it, so we're going to withhold those. And the last thing they do, and we mentioned this a little bit, it's hinted to before, is that they're not going to let him sleep. They're not going to sleep the whole night of Erev Yom Kippur. That's what they were talking about before. We don't want to give him a lot of food that he falls asleep because they're going to keep him up in order to prevent this problem of keri. Now, just to reinforce what I said before, the Gemara in describing the difference between zav or zov and keri, Gemara says that a zov is domeh, is similar to mei batzek shel se'orim, the water of kneaded dough of barley, ve'eno kashur, and it's not viscous. Elo kelovin beitza hamuzeret, like the white of an egg, that is beaten or scrambled. On the other hand, shechvat zera kashur kelovin beitza sheinu muzeret. But the shechvat zera, the keri, similar to the white of an egg when it's not scrambled. So it's viscous, and that's the white color that you're looking for. That's the type of white that they're associating with the white of an egg, that there is possibly that correlation between eggs and the shechvat zera, and why they're noting some of these food substances that are white. Not all of them are, but many of them are, and that might be the correlation between these food substances and the keri. Now, the Gemara says, Lukot orot. One of them went out into the field in order to gather in orot, which are herbs. Tana mishmei de Rabbi Meir, zigargir. These orot that he was going to have to collect, that's gargir, the gargir that we just mentioned in the previous braita. And Rabbi Yochanan, lamani krashman orot. So why are they called orot? Why are these herbs? Is this their name? Shemirot et ha'inayim. They help one with their eyesight, they're efficacious for the eyes, and therefore they're called orot, from the me'or einayim, which is the terminology that's used by the Gemara for sight or eyesight. Amra avuna, gargir, him yocholo ochlo, ochlo. If he can eat it, he should eat it. Or hamotze gargir, someone who finds this gargir, if he have the ability to eat it, then he should go ahead and eat it. Bim lav, if he can't eat it, then ma'viro agabe einav. Then he should rub it on his eyes, use it as a salve rather than consume it, because it's efficacious in that manner as well. Amra Papa, Begargira Matsrana. We're talking about this gargir, we're talking about gargir matsrana. The translation is the gargira of the balk. Rashi translates matsrana as that which is on the border. It sits between different crops. It's really independent of anything, because when you have crops that are close together, it weakens the strength of the item. This gargir that grows independently will not be weakened by any alternative crop. And therefore, it's strong and it's efficacious because of that. That's the type of gargir that you want to use to help you out with your eyes. Alright, now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Gidol Marav, Achsanai lo yochal beitzim. In Achsanai, visitor who's staying at the bed and breakfast should not eat eggs, because they may vili day carry, and that would, as Rashi says, mitganel bnei abayit. It's going to cause the people in the household to be disgusted with it. V'lo yishan b'talito shel bal habayit, and he shouldn't sleep. Now here, Rashi takes it literally. Talito shel bal habayit means cloak of the bal habayit that he uses during the day, he gives you as your blanket for the night. So you shouldn't sleep with that blanket, because shema yireh keri, if there's keri on it, and when the next morning he wants to put it on, it's disgusting, and he'll be upset about that. You could argue, it's even talking about the sheets or the comforters of the bal habayit, which he's going to have to clean or use afterwards, and that a person should be careful because of possible emission at night, that he should not get the property of the bal habayit dirty. Now, in their day, you have to remember they slept without any clothing on, in general. When he says he slept in talito shel bal habayit, that was the only thing that he had on him. And he had no undergarments, he had no clothing. That was his blanket, but a blanket where he wasn't wearing pajamas. So that's where the problem is. Obviously, with pajamas and other items, then you don't have as much of an issue, as long as they're your pajamas. Then there's not as much an issue with the clothing or the blankets or sheets of the bal habayit. Right now we have a Gemara, which is a very difficult Gemara, very controversial Gemara, and has a lot said about it in the Rishonim, which is Rav Miklo the Darshish. Rav used to travel to Darshish on a regular basis. He would travel there. Machriz man habya the yoma. Who's available for the day? Rav Nachman kan miklo the Sheikh Netziv. When he went to this location, this place called Sheikh Netziv, Machriz man habya the yoma. Says, who's available for the day? As Rashi tells us, what does that mean? Man habya the yoma. Yesh isha shetinasei li the yoma. Is there a woman available who will marry me for the day? She'etakev kan, because I'm going to be here for a bit or overnight. Teitzei lachar mikein, and then I'll divorce her afterwards. And that this was a rent-a-wife, and they want to know, they announced beforehand, who's available for this privilege. So similar to what we discussed about the backup to the Kohen Gadol, the backup wife to the Kohen Gadol, this is similar in nature, where the woman's only going to be there for a short period of time, and then he's going to divorce her afterwards. Gemara says, wait a minute, how could you do that? V'atanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, lo yisa adam isha b'medina zo, v'yelech v'yisa isha b'medina acheret. Can't marry a woman in this country, and then go to another country and marry another woman. Shema yizdavgu ze itzel ze, because maybe their children will be read as shidduch. They'll end up getting married. V'nimza achno se achoto. And they won't know. They're not familiar with their brothers and sisters. Not now in the modern day world of communication and flying back and forth. Over there, if they were in separate countries, it's very possible they would never know that there was an alternative family here. If there's no alternative family, you have a possibility of brothers and sisters getting married, whatever the distance is, where it won't be known. So we don't want you to do that. And then the whole world will be full of mamzerim, because we have a problem. That's how the world become full of zimar or mamzerim, because of this lack of knowledge. So you shouldn't marry women in two different countries. You have to consolidate your wives. You have to have them all in one place so everybody's familiar with their half brothers and half sisters. Rabbi says, Amrei, Rabbanon Kala Idahu. So the answer to that question is, these are not your everyday Joe Schmo. These are big guns, big Rabbanon. And people are going to know. If you're a Rav's son, then people are going to know. Or you're going to make sure people know that you're Rav's son. Same with his daughter. So since these are people of stature, their children are going to be well known and you won't have this problem. Valmarova Tavua Linase Vinit Paisa. If one requests a woman's hand in marriage and she agrees, she has to wait 7 days before she can actually get married. She has to wait 7 days Nikiim before she can get married. This is based on what's called Dama Chimud, Dam of Chemda or Chimud, which is of desire. That a woman who her hand has been asked in marriage, she acquiesces to that. There is this concept, the Rabbanon, it's not Min HaTorah, but Mid Rabbanan, that there's a possibility she'll have a setting of Dam. Setting of Dam from the Chimud, from the excitement, from the desire to get married. And therefore we ask her to wait 7 days of Nikim to be sure that there was no Dam HaChimud, or if there was Dam HaChimud and we missed it, that we won't have a problem. Now Dam HaChimud, the Gemara here is Choshish, that it's something that got mixed up and we never see it. But it's possibly she had it, even though we don't see it, and if we make her wait Shiva Nikim. Today it's less of an issue because, first of all, today, the girls in general getting married are of age, already having their menstrual cycles, so they would have to have Shiva Nikim anyway. And number two is that the women today don't go to the mikveh till they are getting married. So they would have to do a cycle of Shiva Nikim anyway in order to get married. So ben kach or ben kach, they end up getting the Shiva Nikim. Now it's clearly this is only a chashash de Rabbanan, a chumra de Rabbanan, but it was widespread and widely accepted that this is the case. So now, how could they just ask for this woman's hand in marriage and then marry her that day? They're coming for that one day, they're coming to marry for a day. How could it be that they were doing this? They have to wait Shiva Nikiim. So Rabbanan, Oduye, Hava Modu Luhu, Mikadem, Hava Mekdime, Umashadre Shlucha. They used to give them notice. They used to send ahead Shlichim. They would give forenotice, forewarn these women that they're coming and that they're interested in getting married. So they gave them the requisite time to have the Shiva Nikiim, so that when they showed up, everything would be okay. V'ibay Teima, this is the controversial part, because the Ibay Teima is going on what? Is this answering the second question, or is this also answering the first question? We have two questions that are posed here. One question that's posed here is, what about the issue of knowledge? How do we know that you're not going to have children here and there, and they're going to have a problem with Mamzerut? Second problem is, what about waiting the requisite 7 days after requesting a woman's hand in marriage? The Gemara answered about each one of those independently before. One is, the Rabbanon are well known, and number two is, they gave notice. They warned them. They forewarned them that they were coming. Now, Vibay Dema is Yichudei Abim Miyachtei Luhu. They were Yichudei Miyachtei Luhu, which the translation of which we'll do in a second. If Yishen Adome, Mishesh Lo Papisalo, Mishen Lo Papisalo. Concept that's brought in the Gemara many times. It's a psychological concept that a person who has is not wanting. It's only when you don't have that you're left wanting. So, for instance, this will be brought up later on in the Avodah of Yom HaKippurim. The person who was appointed to take the Sa'ir Lazazel out to the cliff to throw it out, he is allowed to break his fast on Yom Kippur. If he feels weak or he feels unable to, he's able to eat on his way out in order to give him the strength to take out the Sa'ir Lazazel. So the Gemara talks about they had 10 tents along the way, each one a little less than a meal apart. And they used to have food available to him, and they offered him food every time he got there. The Gemara there says that he never ended up eating because it was pat bisalo. Pat bisalo literally. Because food was available to him, he didn't need to eat, right? That's a classic case if you have. When you're fasting, you can't hold back. You need food so badly, you're feeling starving. On a regular day, you could go through the day without eating because you're just not focused on it. And all of a sudden, you can realize, oh my gosh, I didn't eat the whole day. So there, how come you weren't chasing after food? Because food was available to you. Food wasn't withheld from you. So the same thing that they're saying over here, pat b'salo means if he has a wife available, that's enough to stop the problem. He doesn't actually have to marry her. He doesn't have to actually have access to her. The mere fact that he has a wife is enough to take care of him, local wife, that's enough to take care of him. How you explain this? Rashi says, Yichudei Be'alma says, Ve'ein nizkakim lehen. They did not have bia with them. The person who's married doesn't have that desire, k'mishein lo isha, like someone who doesn't have a wife. The fact that he has a wife, that's enough to temper his desires, and he would be okay. My question is, what is that answering? Is that answering why there's no problem in terms of the kids? Or is it answering the problem in terms of what about this notice and the Shiva Nikiim? So it might be that it's answering both of them. That it's answering the fact that they're not going to have Bia, so the kids is not an issue. And in terms of the Shiva Nikiim, we don't need her to be Naki because he's not getting together with her. The way Rashi reads it is it's simply that they were put in a yichud room together. They were allowed to be yichud, and that's the solution to the problem. Is he just together with her without actually engaging with her? Because of that, you don't have a problem, and all these questions drop away. That means that the marriage was simply for yichud, simply just to be alone together with this woman, and that's enough to be pat bisalo. Now, this concept of pat bisalo comes up in another location. Let's go with ishto nida. Person whose wife is a nida. We don't ask a couple whose wife is a nida. We don't say, oh, you got to leave the house. You got to separate. Or we don't trust you. We don't have that. Gemara explains why. It's because of pat bisalo. This woman will be muteret to him. She will get through this time period of the menstruation. And because of that, she will be muteret later on. And that's papasalo, and we let it go, meaning that we don't ask them to separate. There's another instance in the Gemara in Ketubot. The Gemara in Ketubot talks about a case where they're about to get married, and either the father of the chatan or the mother of the kalah passes away. Which would, because of their avelut, would preclude them from going through with the marriage or consummating the marriage. So the Gemara there says what they do is they get married, then they separate afterwards, meaning that they get married, they have the Shiva Yimei HaMishteh, that postpones the Shiva Yimei HaAvelut, and then afterwards they go into the Shiva Yimei HaAvelut. And in that case, we have them separate completely. The other case is a case where you have what's called Chupat Nida. Chupat Nida is that at the time of the marriage in the Nisuin, the woman is a Nida. And in that case, we do not allow the husband and wife to be alone together or have Yichud together, because here, they've never engaged in marital relations, and the full desire is still there, and we don't trust them to be together. So he has to sleep with the man, and she sleeps with the women, and they stay separate for that first week until she has her Shiva Nikiyim, and she's able to consummate the marriage. So what Tosafot raises over here with this answer of Rashi is, how exactly is it that he's allowed to be miyachid with her? How can he be alone with her? He's never had bia with her. If he's never had bia with her, we have this principle that we don't allow them to be biyichud when they haven't had bia, because the strong desire for the woman might cause them to do something wrong in this situation. Once they've had bia together, once they are married, then we don't worry about it, because the desire has diminished somewhat, and then we don't worry about it. So he asks on Rashi, what's the story here? They never got married, and now you're just going to stick them together in a room? How is that possible? Because of that, the Reed comes up with an alternative shot, and he says, "Dichi amre man havi yoma, lo amre man havi yoma li ba'el." Question wasn't about asking the women to get together and then consummate a marriage, but rather, li yichudei b'hada ba'alma. Question is, who's available to be yichud? Kevin shayurim lehem kach, rak li yichudim lehem, lo yiru odam machmat chimud. Then you won't have this problem of dam of chimud. He's saying that it answers the second question, also happens to answer the first question as well, but the answer is that they didn't make a request of a woman to get married and consummate the marriage. They simply asked, is there anyone available able to be alone with Rav? Is anybody available to be miyached with the Rav? So it was known that there wasn't going to be any bia at that point in time. So there's no bia, there's no problem of dam chimud. So it sounds like from this, he was marrying her, he had kiddushin with her, so he was miyached with her. But there's no problem of dam chimud because the way the request was made. So even though later on, after the request is made, then they married, then there's no dam chimud because she's already halfway there. She knows about the yichud, and then if he asks her, maybe there will be no problem of dam chimud. And then it would be pat b'salo because she's really muteret to him. There's no problem of dam chimud. She's really muteret. She's not a nida. She doesn't have the status of nida because of dam chimud. He just chooses not to be together or to consummate the marriage. He wants to be miyachid with her without consummating the marriage. And so he has pat b'salo, and that's why it would be okay. So that's what Tosafot raises afterward. Tosafot over here challenges the Ri and says he thinks Rashi's right for exactly this reason that I described before, which is, if you have never consummated the marriage, there's a much stronger desire to be together. And therefore we differentiate, because if you have an alman, a widower, then we don't worry about this issue. It's only a bachur, a young man, has yet to consummate a marriage, then we worry about it. So he makes a distinction here at Tosafot, which is an interesting distinction. He says, number one, the Gemara in Ketubot that spoke about the fact that whether they consummate the marriage or not makes a difference if they're allowed to be biyichud. That's a special din because of aveilut. It's a question in aveilut, and therefore, even after biyah, it's a problem. But the issue of nida happens to be a problem if the person hasn't consummated the marriage, hasn't had bia ever. I mean that they've never had bia with a woman. Then there's a problem. But they're already married. and Rav and Rav Nachman already had wives in their hometowns, then this is not an issue. And that's how Tosafot distinguishes over here, that the Yichud's permitted over here, even though she's a Nida, even though they've never consummated the marriage, because he's a older individual. He's already had Bia with a woman, and therefore he doesn't have that strong desire, and therefore he's allowed to be Miyachid with her. It's preventative in nature. On the other hand, if he's a Bachur, a young man, over there, we will not allow them to be biyuchod until he's consummated the marriage. And that's what he differentiates. There are other issues here, including the Rambam quotes the halacha that you're not allowed to marry a woman if you intend to divorce her. Now, it might be over here that it's differentiated because over here, the woman is given notice. Meaning that the Rambam probably is speaking about a situation in which you're marrying the woman intending to divorce her, but you don't tell her. She thinks in her tmimut, thinks it's a good marriage, and you're going to divorce her afterwards. That's unacceptable, but the woman's given warning ahead of time, she knows exactly what she's getting into, over there there may not be a problem. That's probably what's going on over here. We do have some tshuvot from Rivash, from Rav Yosef regarding this. The Rivash was asked, isn't this a bracha levatola? Person who get married here, and kedushin is soon, isn't a bracha levatola, because they're not going to consummate the marriage. So why would you make a bracha on it? So he says, on the contrary, that they did have the ability afterwards, if he wanted to have Bia, if he wanted to keep her, and so therefore it was considered to be a full-fledged marriage, and it was not a bracha levatala, here by Kiddushin and Nisuin. Rav Yosef has a very interesting tshuva, written from Sao Paulo in Brazil. There's a young man who was married, and then he got divorced from his wife. He gave her a divorce, a civil divorce, paid her to make tuba, paid her all her alimony, whatever that she was entitled to, he paid her. And then he wanted to give her a get so that he could get remarried and he could have children. He's a young man. He doesn't have any children. He wants to have children. Mikayim Pruruvu. So he wants to give a get. So the Beit Din asked the woman to show up so that he can give a get. The woman refuses to come. The Beit Din, three times she refuses to come to the Beit Din, and basically leaves him in Aguna, in the sense that she's preventing him from being able to marry another woman because of Cherem Derbeinu Gershom, that you can't have two wives. And since he's not divorced, luckily, from his first wife. Oh, so then the Beit Din in Sao Paulo says, we cannot get Meir Rabbanim down here. So they can't do a Heter Meir Rabbanim because it's just not feasible in Brazil to pull this off. So because of that, they were asking him what they could do. And Rav Yosef says, first of all, he's an Aguna of a Gavro, which is a serious issue. Then he said that we have a din, quoting our Gemara, about Isha L'Yom, that we don't do this anymore because he says our desires, quote-unquote, are tempered, which is an interesting. Even Rav Yosef says about this statement that's brought down aloha by the Rama, it's just definitely not the case, but that's the aloha that's brought, that we don't do these things because our desires are already tempered, and therefore we don't act in this accord, we don't act in this manner to take a second wife or to worry about these issues. So Rav Yosef says, okay, that's aloha. But here, where the man himself is saying that it's very hard for him, he wants to get married, he desires to have children, and that he's afraid for himself, here he's stating specifically that he is worried about the situation. And he's telling you whatever was preskened by the Ramah is not true for him, because he's saying that it's not the case by him. And therefore, Rav Yosef says that it's mutter for him to get married, even though this woman has yet to accept her get. He'll give the get, Baal Korcha, he'll leave the get in Beit Din. That will be it, and he'll be able to marry this second woman, even though there's a cherem that get won't take effect for his first wife. Nevertheless, he'll be able to marry the second woman because Rabbi Yosef quotes our Gemara as support for his ability to marry. He does give a heter, Rabbi Yosef, based on our Gemara for that. All right, so in the end, there are basically three shitot in the Rishonim about what transpired over here. If shitot Rashi, which was that it was simply yichud that cannot lead to biyah because she really was tmeah. She had the dam chimud of 7 days, which is yichud that was allowed. You have the Ri, who said that they called ahead and said that they wanted to be miyached with this woman. They had no intent of marriage. They simply wanted to be miyached with the woman. And that was okay, because that doesn't lead to dam chimud, because it's only yichud. And then you have a Rishonim that basically take both approaches, which is that they asked for yichud up front, but then when they came there, they were miyached with them, with the possibility of having biyah and the possibility of getting married. Because there was no dam chimud, and now if you propose marriage at that point in time, it won't end up with dam chimud. Third approach is Shita of the Raivud, who criticizes the Rambam's approach here to this sugya, and he says that what it means to be miyachid over here was not that he even considered marrying or going into yichud, simply that they set aside a woman in case he did want to get married. And that the Papas Alo here is knowing the fact that he had a woman that he could marry when he came to this location. Just like the other Rishonim who say that asking for Yichud is not enough to generate Dam Chimud, so there was no Dam Chimud, but knowing that he could marry this woman when he came here was sufficient to protect him from the problem of Keri. The only thing I will note is you might want to differentiate between the Papas Alo that's used here and then in other places. Like by the person who takes out the Sir Lazazel, Papas Alo there means that it's readily available to him. The Gemara uses the same terminology with regards to a Nida. A husband and wife, where it's a Nida, they're allowed to be Miyached because it's Papas Alo in the sense that she will return to Heter after this time period. Here, the Rishonim are using Papas Alo in the sense that this woman may never be Mutar to him. She's going to leave before she's ever Mutaret, and it's still called Papas Alo. So that's really a stretch or a different utilization of the word Papas Alo, which is he could eventually get there, maybe, and that they call Papas Alo, even though it's not determined that he will reach a point of heter with her, or that he can have bial with her. Nevertheless, the Rishonim are calling that Pat Bisalo. The Gemara is brought here because Amagido Merav is that lo yuchal beitzim. It's preventing a problem of a seminal mission. So there are two, one is the food, and the other one is having an extra wife. That was the two things. So that's the context of why it's brought in the Gemara. And it has halachic ramifications, because we pass an halacha like this. Although again, it was slowly retracted. They should pull back on it later on and say, we don't do this anymore. Alright. Masrua ziknei beitim ziknei kihuna. The ziknei beitim then pass them on to the ziknei kihuna, the elders of the Kohanim. The elders of beitim now pass them on to the elders of the Kohanim. Now, before they do that, it's like a dangling modifier, because then it says Ve'elu, and they took him up. Who took him up? This all references back to the Ziknei Beitin, the elders of Beitin. Ve'elu the Beit Avtinas, they take him up to the area where they made the Ktoret, Beit Avtinas, who knows the Ktoret, and they were going to teach him how to do the Ktoret for Yom HaKippurim. Bishbiu, and they make him take a Shavu'ah, V'nifteru, and then they left him, Ahulachem, they went away. Vamrulo, and they said to him, now again, this is a dangling modifier, this is talking about the Ziknei Beitin. Before they left it, this is what they said to him. This is the detail of what transpired in the conversation between them and the Shavuah. Ishi Kohen Gadol, Adom, our master, the Kohen Gadol, Anu Shluchei Beitin, we are the emissaries of Beitin, Vata Shlucheinu V'Shliach Beitin, and you are our emissary as well as an emissary of Beitin. You're an emissary of all of Klal Yisrael. Vashbin Anu Alecha, we make you take a Shavuah, V'mi Shachein Shmo B'Bayit Azeh, the one who dwells in this house, the Shechina Hashem, Shlo Tishaneh Davar Mikol Ma'asher Amarnu Lecha. You won't change anything that we taught you. Now this is specifically geared, as the Gemara will tell us, to the Ktoret, the machlok between the Tztuki and the Prushim, how to put the Ktoret on, whether you put the Ktoret on the pan of coals only after you were in the Kodesh HaKodeshim or before you entered the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So since this is one of the major fights between the Tztuki and the Prushim, they wanted to make sure that he would do it the way they taught him and not act like a Tztuki and put it on before he entered into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So take him, take a Shavua. Obviously, in the latter half of Bayit Sheni, where they're buying the Kuna Gdola and the Tztukim are prevalent, this is a serious issue for them, and that's why they're doing this. Hu poreshu buche, he separates that and cries. Vein poreshinu buchin, again, the Gemara will discuss why they're crying about this. Himaya chacham. So now this goes back to the previous Mishnah, which says what he does overnight. If he's a chacham, doresh. Then he gives a drasha, he gives shir. Vim lav, tamari chachim doreshim lefanav. If not, they bring in tamari chachim to be doresh in front of him, to keep him awake. Vim ragilik wrote, koreh. If he knows how to read Tanakh, he should read it. Vim lav, korim lefanav. And then they read in front of him. Ubameh korim lefanav. What do they read to him? Be'iov, be'ezra, ubedivrei ayamim. Iyov Ezra and Divrei Yomim, as Rashi says, Shein Dvarim Mamshichim Et Halev L'Shoman. Those are engaging stories that get pique your interest and you'd want to stay awake for to hear the rest of it. Iyov Divrei Yomim, I don't know if these would be the top picks, but obviously in their day they found those engaging or interesting, and so therefore they would read him these items in order to keep him awake. Zecharia ben Kvutol Omer Pamim Arbeh Karitu Lifanav Den Daniel. Many times I read before him in Daniel, his point being that the Kohen Gadol didn't even understand Hebrew. Daniel has a large amount of Aramaic in it, and he was reading to him in Aramaic and not in Hebrew. That's why he was reading Daniel. So he's suggesting that the Kohanim Gadolim were so ignorant, forget about reading Hebrew, they didn't know Hebrew, and they were unable to hear him read Hebrew and had to read things that were Aramaic. Okay, we'll stop over here.